The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
106. But we had another horrifying escalation in the Middle East as yesterday Israeli airstrikes in Gaza claimed the lives of 20, including civilians, while four Israeli soldiers were killed and dozens injured in a Hezbollah drone attack. Tensions mount and the humanitarian crisis is deepening and the international community remains on edge. To provide insight, I'm joined by Fawaz Gurgis, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science, and by Declan Power, Defence and Security Expert. Good morning and welcome to you both. Now, we'll go to Fawaz in a moment when we want to talk about the strategic element of all of this. But Declan, first of all, we want to talk to you about the attacks on UNIFIL by the IDF. What is going on precisely? What is their purpose?
Okay, Pat. I think the purpose is a campaign of intimidation and harassment. I don't think there's a genuine desire by the IDF to seriously injure or kill members of UNIFIL. But if you look in the broad and the round about this, the attacks and the harassment are part of what seems to be a wider attempt to shape a narrative. Now, the on-the-ground reality is Israel is hell-bent on going in and dismantling Hezbollah's apparatus, its apparatus to launch offensive attacks into Israeli territory, be they missile attacks or be they incursions. And that's if you look at the statements emanating from them, a lot of their operations are around justifying the dismantling of villages, the demolition of villages, I should say, and attacks there, and finding tunnels, finding clusters of munitions, and coalescing points. Now, the thing that is somewhat disturbing that I've noticed as well is that in addition to this, IDF statements are saying that UNIFIL posts, on one hand, they're talking about wanting them to clear out for their own protection, their own safety. And then there is an additional mention of UNIFIL posts being used as firing points for Hezbollah, and that in some cases facilitating or being used by Hezbollah. Now, that's not true. And maybe there have been occasions where there have been, in recent times, some rockets fired in proximity to UNIFIL posts. But it would be incorrect to say that they're being facilitating, they've been facilitating attacks. So I see this as maybe a kind of getting the retaliation first, that if the IDF do cause serious injury to peacekeepers, that they would be trying to justify it, saying that UNIFIL had unintentionally become part of the Hezbollah problem. Now, that's not true, to put that into place. That's confusing the issue, and it's a dangerous confusion.
Now, what do you make of the stories that close to where the IDF struck at the UNIFIL base, that UNIFIL troops were becoming ill, they had stomach aches, and they were absolutely upset by it? The suggestion is maybe gas released by the IDF, not a lethal gas, but upsetting gas. What do you make of that?
Well, I think if there was any truth to the fact that it was a gas as such, I think UNIFIL would have issued a statement about it. And I think they would have been able, the troops on the ground would have been able to determine that. I think what did happen was, I think smoke was fired, and anyone who's ever experienced those kinds of things, it is not comfortable if you're engulfed in that, and it will have an impact on your cardiovascular system. It will have an impact. It can nauseate you. And I think, again, it's a stepping up or another step in the intimidation and harassment campaign. I don't think, again, that they were setting out to gas UNIFIL troops, because if there was any evidence of that, UNIFIL would have issued it. UNIFIL have been very quick to issue statements, quicker than I would have expected, where they have been putting blame where it deserves to be, and accusing Israel of deliberate attacks. Now, deliberate attacks does not mean that they're saying that it's an Israeli command and control led policy. But what they are saying is that the Israeli troops on the ground who are doing these things know what they're doing. It's not an accident.
Okay, now your colleague Senator Tom Clonan was saying that we should rotate the Irish troops out of 652, where they are isolated, 30 of them. Is that any kind of, it might be wise if you could get them out, give them a little rest from the tension and intimidation and all the rest, but is it safe to rotate?
Well, I understand Tom's consideration there, and he, in essence, it would be nice if you could do that. But I mean, I would be driven if I was making that decision. If I was the battalion commander, I would be driven by what the commander of the troops at 652 was telling me. I would be driven by the reports I would be getting from J3 and J2, the operations and intelligence officers. Because, it would be lovely to rotate them, to give them a break, but not if it's going to put their lives in jeopardy by moving them. And I know from my own experience that shelter in place is the safest thing to do when there is high intensity operations going on around you. You're reducing and mitigating risk considerably by just bunkering down, and you're in your territory that you have already shored up.
Now, finally, I should ask you what the drone penetration of the Iron Dome by Hezbollah indicates to you about their capabilities.
I don't see it as anything terribly significant. If anything, I see it as beneficial to the Israelis to justify them pounding Hezbollah in an even more deadlier way. It was maybe a propaganda coup. They obviously killed four Israeli soldiers and wounded a number of others. But I think if Hezbollah had significant capacity to strike, using drones, they would be doing it. I mean, certainly if they have significant capacity to do any strategic damage to Israel, now is the time for them to be doing it. I don't see this as dissuading or diminishing or derailing the Israeli onslaught.
You don't think this represents any improvement in the technology available to Hezbollah from the Iranians or whoever that enabled this to happen? Because the Americans are sending this THAAD defense system, which is much more sophisticated, it appears, than what they currently have, to protect them from aerial onslaught.
Well, I think that's convenient. It's good to have the justification. But if you roll it back, Pat, and you think about it, the Israelis have demonstrated their complete penetration of Hezbollah. They have had a very accurate intelligence picture of late that has allowed them to take out the top layer of leadership in Hezbollah, virtually unimpeded. So therefore, Israel's intelligence picture of Hezbollah and its capabilities right now at this point in time it's not 100%, but it's not far off it. So I don't see them as being surprised by this. I don't see them as being concerned about this. And I think it's a very convenient fig leaf to justify further deployment of US weapon systems in support of Israel.
All right, Declan, thank you very much for joining us. Declan Power, defence and security expert. Listening to that conversation, Fawaz Gurgis. Fawaz, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, what do you make of the developments over the weekend? More deaths in Gaza and more civilians killed by the IDF. And it does appear as if there is nowhere to which to flee.
Well, you know, you're asking really multiple questions, Pat. I mean, the first question, what's happening in northern Gaza and the north, in particular in the Jabalaya camp, is catastrophic. You have 400,000 Palestinians who are besieged, who have been displaced multiple times. Israel has been bombing the hell out of the north hospitals. Last night, the attack on a school sheltering civilians killed 22, including many children. Even Harris, the presidential candidate, has called on Israel to allow food and humanitarian aid to the north. It is truly catastrophic. And yet Israel, because the world is distracted now by Israel's invasion of Lebanon, hardly any attention on the north, where the General Secretary of the United Nations have been saying what's happening in the north is beyond catastrophic. I think in Lebanon, we are seeing the beginning of all-out war, a long war. You've heard your speaker, Israel has won the first round. It's just the first round because Hezbollah seems to be almost back on its feet. It has regained the initiative. It is basically bombing the very heart of Israel. Your speaker did not mention that the attack yesterday was against one of the most important special operation forces in Israel, the Golani. It killed four soldiers and injured around 70 special operation forces. Ironically, here you have Hezbollah, a party on its feet, according to Israel and many speakers, expert, defense expert. Yet Hezbollah really has taken the moral high ground. It carries attacks against military and industrial targets, where Israel, I mean, basically does not distinguish between civilians and combatants. The reality is now you have a multi-front war. Israel is bogged down. I mean, we never mention Israel now is fighting in the north, supposedly after it had defeated Hamas about 9 months ago. Yet Hamas is deeply entrenched in the north, according to Israel. So the fact is, where's the victory, Netanyahu's Benjamin total victory in the north? In Lebanon, Pat, from Hezbollah's perspective, the war has not started because Hezbollah has been rattled. Hezbollah is off balance. Hezbollah has suffered major, painful, heavy attacks. It's beginning to regain its command and control. From Hezbollah's perspective, according to its leaders, which I listen to quite very often on a daily basis, they are preparing for a long war, and they are gradually escalating the response. People don't realize every day Israel attacks, I mean, many cities, whether you're talking about Haifa or Tel Aviv, and there is really blanket censorship by the Israeli authorities on the military targets attacked by Israel. But it's now really almost all out war, both in Gaza and in Lebanon, and its risk turning into a wider regional conflict directly between Israel and Iran.
And both Iran and Iraq warning about the dangers of a broader regional war. The question of America and the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, the THAAD battery, it's also sending American soldiers to man those batteries, which is pretty significant, I would think.
It is very significant because, I mean, the bigger message, Pat, we have to read between the lines, is that Israel, in the eyes of Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran, cannot protect itself. Why would the United States deploy the most sophisticated air defense system it has if Israel really could defend itself? You heard when Iran retaliated against Israel a week ago, you heard that it was a failure. The Israeli military did not tell you that dozens of Iranian missiles hit air bases and defense bases. And the Americans are concerned about Israel's being able to defend itself if and when Israel basically attacks Iran in the next few days, and if and when Iran responds back. This is question one. The second question is, it tells me there is no daylight between the Biden administration and the Netanyahu-led government. And look, if I were Netanyahu, I mean, it's perfect. It's a perfect option for Netanyahu. He takes and takes and takes, and he does whatever he wants. He escalates war in Gaza and the north and in Lebanon and against Iran, and the United States comes to its aid. In fact, the Biden administration is doubling down on its support for Netanyahu, even though Benjamin Netanyahu is threatening all-out wider regional conflict and basically could plunge the United States into the killing fields of the Middle East. So from Benjamin Netanyahu's perspective, the elections, the U.S. elections are 3 weeks away from now. This is a perfect moment for Benjamin Netanyahu to do whatever he wants, because he will never have such a moment unless Donald Trump recaptured the White House in November, and Benjamin Netanyahu will get another green light to do whatever he wants.
Mm. The question of what a Trump presidency might do, I mean, Donald Trump is an isolationist. He doesn't much care for the transatlantic relationship. He wants to make friends with Xi in China and Putin in Russia. The idea of American boots on the ground anywhere would be anathema to him. What is to say that a Trump presidency would be good for Israel? Writing those checks all the time for billions and billions of weaponry. I mean, once he's there, he cannot go, if he was to be elected, he cannot go a third time. So, you know, what's he going to do?
Well, look, Pat, one of the lessons we have learned in the past, really, since the late 1960s, is that you cannot really apply the same methodology, the same analysis to Israel. Israel, we call it in international relations, there's a term we have used. In the case of Israel, the tail wags the dog, literally, whether you're talking about even Barack Obama, the most intelligent and educated and charismatic American leaders. He basically said it in his memoirs. When it comes to Israel, he said the political cost, and he explained it very clearly, the political costs of not really providing Israel with whatever it wants outweigh any benefits because it has major political electoral implications. So my fear, given Trump's hostility to Iran, in fact, I've written about this, Pat, is that if Donald Trump is reelected, the possibility of an American-Iranian war is real because of, I mean, the people around Donald Trump. So will the situation get worse? You bet, Pat. We have learned in the Middle East and other theaters, even though the situation is catastrophic now, even though you have more than 42,000 Palestinians who have been killed, 100,000 injured. Gaza is no more. It's a wasteland. Now you're talking about Netanyahu threatening to turn Lebanon into another Gaza. With the Trump administration, I think the situation will most likely get worse because the possibility of that Benjamin Netanyahu using the Trump administration to really go for his, what I call his overarching strategic goal to try to destroy the Iranian nuclear program. So, yeah, in the case of Israel, I think what we have learned about international relations and U.S. foreign policy, it really does not apply to relations with Israel.
Vavas Gerger is Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.